Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists. Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
You are listening to the Spiritual Activist Radio Show, and I am Rahasia Uncensored, where we look at the world not as it is, but as we know it can be, if and only if we have the courage to question the answers we've been given. This is our world, and it's time for us to take it back.
Okay, today we're going to be talking to Carly Mattimore and Linda Starr Wolf, who wrote a book called Sacred Messengers of Shamanic Africa. And we're going to be getting into a little bit of everything today, including the importance of looking at what's going on in our world and really getting out there and being an activist, but doing it in such a way that we're not part of the problem. Now let's listen to a very interesting interview. And keep in mind that the Spiritual Activist Radio Show is a nonprofit radio show, and your donations are completely tax deductible through our PayPal link, which can be found on the BBS show. You scroll down a little bit and you'll see a click here, or you can visit www.spiritualactivist.com. Thank you very much. So hello, Carly and Linda Starr Wolf. How are you two doing today?
Fabulous.
Wonderful.
All right. So I have some questions.
Glad to be here.
I have some questions, but let me give you an idea of sort of the direction I'd like to take some of this into. I've talked with Michael Tellinger in South Africa about a lot of the human beginnings. That's of interest to me. Fact that Starr Wolf, you've worked as a therapist in addiction. That's what I used to do too. And there's a lot of interest in South Africa right now because a lot of the information that's coming out is re-identifying the cradle of civilization as being more into that area. And with Michael Tellinger's work, with all of the energy systems there and thousands of gold mines, this directly relates back to maybe we had some extraterrestrial intervention into our past. So I'd like to at least touch on that along with what both of you like to talk about too. So who would like to start out?
I can go ahead and begin just say that, you know, South Africa is an incredibly sacred place, and it exists where it exists in this sacred country. Well, how do I say it? I'm going to kind of back up just a little bit. South Africa is there is the 31st longitudinal meridian that runs directly through South Africa. And that meridian, which goes up to Zimbabwe, but it goes all the way up to, you know, the center of Africa. And that meridian is considered, you know, if we look at the bigger picture of things, the spine of the world. You know, when our world was once one continent, you know, which was called Pangaea, in Pangaea, this sacred longitudinal meridian, which connects with Giza, actually, the Sphinx Paws, lie right on this meridian, is, you know, the center place of Earth, of Mother Earth. And so we can look at it as the spine of this ancient cradle of civilization where we all are said to have evolved from. You know, so underneath this spine, you know, this 31st meridian, which is the Nilotic meridian, exists this gold that you talk about, you know, and where these ancient discoveries, you know, this history that we believed, you know, something completely different in the past, and are now getting more and more information that lets us know the significance of that underlying gold meridian that lies within this continent underneath this core spine of the Earth. And above it is the, you know, the Milky Way constellation, the River of Stars, which is another river. So there's been lots of understanding and reference to many times, particularly for the indigenous people, that there is this river of connection that exists here that reflects an understanding that as above, so below. So what is represented above is here on earth, and what is represented here is also represented below. So that there is this connection that brings together mankind, or whatever we want to call it, the existence of the first of times. It's land of Zeptepi, where everything is said to have originally evolved from. And it's in our DNA. We have a connection to this sacred place, and the understanding and the mysteries of it are just beginning to unfold in powerful ways.
You know, I was just interviewing Greg Braden, and we were talking about this because we know now that our DNA, the human DNA, evolved over time sort of naturally, but there was a time in our history about 200,000 years ago when the telomeres were spliced together like this on four of our chromosomes, which brought us down from 48 to 46. And the only way that telomeres could have been spliced together would have been in a lab with really, really advanced technology. And he says, if that's not enough, and this has been validated by people like Bruce Lipton, you know, a pioneering microbiologist, and if that's not enough, after these were spliced together, there were separate little junctions that were switched off that were redundant. So it wasn't having a redundant pattern in our DNA. So now we're getting actually some really good science behind the fact that we really need to take another look at our ancient past, and not only for the science of it, where we came from, but what you two are doing also is bringing out the extreme need for indigenous information right now that has been suppressed, in some countries made illegal. And I know when I went to Brazil, and I've done some ayahuasca journeys and have shamans hold the space, it doesn't take much to figure out that there's a whole nother realm, a whole nother dimension of thought and understanding. And that whole other dimension is also us. We have another dimension that we're not paying attention to.
I was going to speak into the religious freedoms, if you will, of the shamanic world. And oftentimes we think of other places, you know, where there's genocide, and genocide is still happening today, and where people are punished for practicing their religions, and other religions are superimposed upon other religions. But I just want to bring it to our own attention that the Religious Freedom Act didn't occur here in the United States until like the early 1980s, as I believe when that came about. So prior to that, the Native American peoples of this country doing simple things such as a sweat lodge, a medicine wheel, their peyote ceremonies in their churches, anything like that, pipe ceremonies, were considered blasphemous, were considered heathen, and were considered, and still are by many people, quite frankly, but also were considered, it was illegal for them to practice or to have a lodge. So, and it almost became non-existent until kind of the wave of the 60s came through, and from the, you know, this kind of revival of this, I guess you could say, the wild energy that's in our DNA, that came back through music and through the altered states that people were creating for themselves through music and through plants and through, you know, also, what did you say, life enhanced by chemistry at the time, those kinds of things. And that this return, if you will, to the indigenous mind is what my whole world and what my whole teachings is about, is to reclaim our own lineage, because we're all lost tribes, all of us, whether we identify with Native American or African or Egyptian or Celtic, which is more my lineage. I have Celtic and Native American background, that we are all lost tribes, and that this DNA is within all of us. When we go to certain places like this, and you know, Carly's made so many trips to Africa and been involved in these studies for quite a while. And my studies have been more in Egypt. So it's kind of like upper and lower Egypt, if you will, or the spine, because as you said, Carly, the that meridian runs all the way right into the paws in between the Sphinx. I was in Egypt a few months ago, and, you know, we stood at the Sphinx at sunrise in between those paws, and I imagined that meridian running all the way back down into Africa and connecting the two together, and that this is the DNA, that this is the spine, and it's through the spine in Egypt that enlightenment comes. I'll just throw that out there. It's called the Djed. It's through the spine and through the connection of all those vertebrae that you're talking about, and through the Kundalini life force energy that travels through those meridians, which is the gold within the humans.
That's right.
That is that the sacred elixir, that Kundalini life force Shakti energy that flows. And it's uniting that Upper Egypt and that Lower Egypt of Africa. So there's a very, they're really, you know, we have these imaginary lines that these are countries, you know, and these are really, this is really one world. And of course it was all connected at one point, but I guess I just want to make the point that the shamanic world is very much alive, not only in the indigenous peoples, but also in the lost tribes. That's why the three of us are sitting here today. We're remembering something very deep that's within us, and we're being triggered by it. And we're being called to go back to Africa, to go back to Egypt, to go to, I'm going to Peru in just a couple of months. And I know you're going back to Africa in a few months. We're being called to these sacred places because these are the organs on the planet that are also mirrored within us.
Yeah. And, you know, we lost it. You know, I think that I want to speak into that too, that we all became separated because of incredible trauma, you know, throughout, you know, many lineages. And when there's trauma, there's then often a reaction for over control. And we went into very much a rational mind and really disconnected from our own inner authority, our own inner truth, mm-hmm. our own understanding, our connection to the seasons and all of the elements had to go into a dormant state, you know, because of that trauma. And so a lot of what this book is about how to reclaim that, how to heal the traumas within ourselves, you know, which also represent the traumas on the planet. And as we do that, and shamanic breathwork is one of the ways that the tools that we use to heal this separation, to heal our own disconnect from our right and left brain, from our own truths, from our own inner authority, our own inner lion. These are, you know, these are really important pieces to our remembering our interconnectedness with everything, whether it's that we were from another planet, you know, and came here to Earth. Whatever the reason is, this is how my understanding is, you know, that remembering helps us understand the bigger picture of our interconnectedness with all of life, and that we are vibrant organ beings, that we, you know, myself as a cell in the vastness of this universe, and as I take responsibility for my own self and heal my own traumas and integrate that dark and light within me, I can access the flow and the truth, you know, in relationship with the shamanic world and bring about a new way of being in this world. And we all do that, you know, when we're doing this work.
You know, I have to tell you, sitting here and looking at you two look like a force to be reckoned with. And I see this more and more with the women of the world. Like, I wrote a book a while back, To Believe or Not to Believe, the Social and Neurological Consequences of Belief Systems. And there's one chapter in there about the women of the world waking up and taking positions, not only just of token power, but of real power that they can influence mm-hmm. what's going on. And that's happening in our world more and more. And I've noticed something. If you look through my recent library of books, almost, I would say 80% is from women coming out into the world, bringing their matriarchal power into all of these subjects, whether it be science or what you're doing. And when you look back in time, that wasn't the case. You know, like speaking of Egypt, I don't know if you know about Schwaller de Lubitz, but I was interviewing John Anthony West. He recently passed away, but we were talking mm-hmm. about some of the buildings up there. It wasn't so much that they're places where teaching takes place, the building itself was a teaching. Just walking through the building, he says, you can walk through the building and things are triggered from the geometry, from the way it's laid out. And I think that's true of the planet. And it sounds like you two have been down in places in South Africa where it's really great to be able to write about it in such a way that, you know, Joe and Margaret over here that are just trying to keep food on the table and the kids in school and shoes on their feet can pick up a book and actually get it, that there is something special happening on the planet. And it's comforting to know that people like you are out there doing this, because heaven knows that none of us are doing this for the money. You know, the money isn't that great. We're just doing it and making ends meet, and we're passionate about it. And I like the one chapter in here called Spiritual Warrior. And maybe you can help me out on this, because I have a balancing act between being really out there. I mean, it would be easy for me to be a major whistleblower and reactionary and revolutionist, but it seems like that is more the male response to what's going on. So I keep pulling myself back to my inner self, my spiritual warrior, with a little more feminine aspect to it. And that sort of guides me. And I know people ask me, what's the difference? You say women are powerful. What's the difference? And for me, the difference is this. If you take a man and say, hit me with all you've got, he can hit you really hard with maybe 100 pounds of pressure. And you ask a woman, and he's done. That he's wore himself out. You ask a woman to hit you as hard as she can hit you 150 times with 1 pound of pressure. It's more of a subtle constant. You know, some men call that something else, but it's more of a constant push, you know? And I think that is the best way to, I'm being really polite right now, you know, but that's the best way to do it. You know, you can tell I'm married, huh? But if you could respond to that.
I thought you might be.
Yeah. If you could respond to that and the feminine nature of being a spiritual warrior, that would be great.
I think I'll go ahead and start, and then I'll invite Star Wolf in to also add anything that you would like to add. A big part of the work is really the integration of the feminine and masculine within ourselves. And both men and women carry these in a very unhealthy way based on patriarchy. So women, you know, even though they may, they may also carry the intuitive aspects, you know, of the feminine or the softer, gentler aspects of it, they can also carry an inner masculine because they had to mold themselves to the patriarchy in order to survive. So it's very much in each of us. You know, it is that right and left brain. And I think what's unfolding now is we see that the old way of being a warrior, you know, which is that very direct, linear, patriarchal way of using force to get our point across. You know, it's understanding that the masculine energies or that left brain qualities, you know, are that more linear, they're more focused. They can hold the container, you know, they're directed, they can use the energy, and that you combine it with a healthy feminine energy of the intuition, of the love, of this integration of these incredible, positive, healthy aspects of the feminine, you're creating within both men and women this integration of these two energies to be able to work in an embodied way. I think a big part of it is to bring spirit into our own physical beings, you know, to integrate, you know, the divine within us, holding this space of this big container, you know, and the women right now have done more of that work, you know, in many ways. They're carrying it right now because we are moving into this new place of being on the planet, which is calling forth a brand new feminine energy with the masculine. We have to have that masculine energy, but a healthy masculine energy to move forward in a new way embodied as spiritual warriors, and I don't even know that that's the correct term for it, but it is a new kind of warriorship that is upon us right now, you know, to step, you know, I think you were speaking into that. How do I move forward in this without trying to force it? And I think the big piece is coming through the heart. It's bringing the integration of these energies, you know, into balance within our own selves, and bringing spirit and speaking from a place of truth within us, in that inner lion or that inner authority. But we can only do it if we've done our own work, and it continually needs to be examined always so that we're clear. So we come to the table clearing our own mirrors as we walk forward on this path to right this, you know, this way that things have been out of balance. But people only heal when they feel seen and heard and loved.
Well, I don't know that I'll add a whole lot to that, except to say that people have referred to me as a spiritual warrior for about 40 years. And, you know, so I've often asked myself what that means, because I personally have been one of those people that says the impossible just takes a little longer, and have persevered with things until I've helped bring them to fruition along with support. I also know that it's not just an I or me, it's a we. It's, you know, it's I'm very Aquarian in nature, meaning that I'll have, you know, visions and things, and I have the Sagittarius energy as well, of being able to focus and have that more direct energy, like Sekhmet, to focus and bring things into fruition. But in that process, I've also really learned to communicate with people. I mean, Carly and I both together collectively have been, our therapy wisdom is probably is about 80 years, you know. I've been doing therapy and counseling of some kind, especially the last 25 years as shamanic, but since I was 20. So, you know, we've got a lot of experience of listening to people and communicating with people. So to me, the big part of learning to be a spiritual warrior is not only being direct and being focused, but it's about communication, and it's about aligning myself with others, you know, and finding common causes. And, you know, the one thing that did come to my mind, and this last piece, I'll say on that as a spiritual warrior. In Egypt, there's a god or a deity or an archetype named Ptah, P-T-A-H, Ptah. And Ptah, many people don't even know who Ptah is in Egypt. They know, you know, the goddess Isis or Osiris or Sekhmet or something. But many people don't even know who Ptah was. But his religion, his cult, if it was, if you will, lasted for more than 2,000 years. And that was the main religion of the of those people at that time. But what he was known for, which is fascinating to me, but what his message is that he was the one that had this long tongue that would come out, and he had the forked tongue. Now we think of that as being kind of, you know, speaking with one tongue but not being the other. But his tongue was many forks or many branches. And when his tongue came out, it was because he could speak to everyone. He knew how to speak to people. And the other thing he was known for, that before he ever opened his mouth and spoke, he listened, he took in the information, he was very wise. And he passed it through his heart chakra first. But there's the heart mysteries of Africa and Egypt that are very important to the peoples, to the animals there. They ancient peoples there passed it through the heart. Not only is this good for me, but is this good for the lions? Is this good for the elephants? Is this good for the hyenas? Is this good for the other tribes? Is this good for the Balboa trees? Is this good for the rivers? He passed it through his heart. And if it was not worthy of his heart, he did not speak it, because when you speak it, it comes into being, the word made flesh. So that was Ptah. He was a creator god who considered wisely for a while. Even if he had a great idea and was very excited, he waited, he listened before he spoke it. So I think that's a very big part of being a warrior these days, is to take in the information. And there's so much information, as you know, Rahasia, there's so much information. You know, it's fake news, you know, it's like, what is and what isn't. We have got to, as Carly said earlier, pass it through the wisdom of our own hearts. And remember that we do have an internal GPS system. We do have an inner shaman. all of us. We do have that part of us in our DNA that knows when something's BS and when something is real. But if our heart's not connected, then we're just going to go with ideologies. We're going to go with belief systems. We're going to go with stimulus. We're not going to be coming from wisdom.
Yeah, you know, you just bringing this up, I know this is going to sound strange, but maybe not to you, but I can feel in my heart area, heart chakra, something, I can feel a resonance with a lot of what you two are talking about. And when I read your book, I read it as a more of a male skimming through it. And when I started getting through the end, I realized, oh my God, I need to reread this and in a Heinleinian sense, grok it. There's another level of understanding here that you don't get. And I'm curious now to read it in more of a relaxed flow and really letting it sink in, because I caught a couple of parts in here that it's hard to even put words on. But there are things in here that triggers thoughts. And I had a couple of thoughts triggered, and I went back and tried to figure out where that came from. And it wasn't in the book in words, but it was in the book as triggers. Does that make sense to you?
Definitely makes sense, you know. And the book carries an energy. You know, that book was meant to be written. You know, it had many, many challenges till it finally came to, and it's interesting that it came now at this time. You know, in our world, when things are so critical, you know, when these messages are right now going to be heard in a brand new way, but the book itself carries an energy, a vibration, you know, everything does. And our heart registers that. We're beginning to open our hearts, both men and women, you know, regardless of gender. We are feeling more into what is the truth as we awaken. Where before, a lot of that was shut down, you know, and I even write about that in my own book. All the ways we had to close off our inner knowing and put our trust in somebody else to tell us what was real and not real. You know, we disconnected, you know, and just went into this mind, and our mind creates a story and it attaches to stories. And it has been disconnected from that real truth. It resonates in our bodies. We begin to now understand that there is a mind-body connection. Everything is connected, spiritual, emotional, physical. It's all, we're all, you know, we're it. We are a microcosm, you know, of this macrocosm of the earth. And each of us has this, and I want to really just speak into that, an energy that as we begin to heal and transform and remember and, you know, cook in who we really are, you know, to be true to our own natures. We bring this into the world and it shifts, you know, everything around us, the energy around us. So the words themselves do that.
Yeah, what you're saying right now is it's been so important in my life because I look into all kinds of things and my spiritual friends get on my case sometimes because they say, oh, you can't look at that because if you start thinking about it, you're going to manifest it. But until we get to the point to where we can actually look at things like the pedophile groups and the sex slavery going on all over the planet, the powers that be, they want that to look horrendous because they know if it's really bad, really horrendous, people don't want to think about it. But there's something in me that allows me to look at the ugliness of this world and pull it in and transform it. And I feel like I'm doing a little small part at healing what I'm looking at. And I've realized along the way, we all have this ability because it not only heals it in a sort of the inner energetic levels of being, but it also puts a light on it out there. And I remember watching The Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz, they're all scared about the wizard. They're going to Oz and they're just terrified of this monster, you know? And when they get to Oz, it's odd too that the dog is the one that pulls the curtain back. But when that curtain gets pulled back and they see that it's just an old, frail, old, sick old man pulling levers, that is what's happening today. We're pulling back the curtain on all of this darkness. And when light gets in there, it changes how they can act, because of a lot of the secrecy is the very foundation of their power. And once that secrecy is exposed, it changes everything. So I can feel what you're saying in my being. And I think as people wake up to this, we'll start being able to process some of this darkness. And I think shamanic practices, I used to sit with a curandero down in Mexico years ago, and he would hold the space. I think we were taking peyote at the time, and we would go into some pretty dark realms. And I was reading Carlos Castaneda at the time, and there is some real darkness out there that I think we can heal. And as we come back into this balance, because I think the feminine movement, feminine's lib and all that, it went to the extreme. And now we're coming back to this place of balance, where a woman can be a woman and gentle, but still have force, you know? And what do you say to that?
Well, the thing that comes up for me, because as I said, having been an addictions therapist and a counselor and more of a shamanic, integrating that all in and being more of a shamanic teacher for the past 25 years, one of the things that I've really come to understand is that if I really want to transform consciousness, that I have to begin with me. And that part of that, you know, has been through journeying through shamanic breath work and doing lots of inner work. But one of the biggest ways that I know how to transform consciousness is to deal with shadow. So in our work that we do, with my organization, Venus Rising Association for Transformation, and I know that Carly does with her congregation with Ahara, is one of the biggest things that we do is that we teach people to own their own shadow. And by what I mean by that, some people get really scared of that. They're like, oh, you know, they'll say, but I want enlightenment. And I'm going to say, if you want enlightenment, you first have to have endarkment. And what I mean by that is to, you know, take the mote out of our own eye, as it says in the Bible. So basically to look at ourselves and say, you know, first of all, it's humanity. It's humanity that has created the mess that we're in. It's not the animals that have created it. It's not the trees, the redwood forest or the, you know, baboa trees. It's not the rivers. Yes, the elemental world can be chaotic at times, like it blew the power line down today in my space. You know, it's like the elemental world, the volcanoes erupting, all those kinds of things. But many times the reason that the outer world is reacting that way is because human beings are out of balance. Now, there's times when certainly this planet's been trying to stabilize for a long time, and there's Pangaea was a part of the, everything was together and it came apart. So who's to say that the planet won't always have its own amount of chaos and turmoil and creativity? But human beings truly make an impact on the planet. And anybody that doesn't understand that, it's very difficult for me to understand that there must be something mentally missing to not understand that, you know, we if we go out and light a match and the forest burns down, we have an impact. If we pollute our waters, you know, by not having sanctions on industry, that it pollutes the waters. You know, we have an impact, a huge impact, and there's 7.5 billion of us now that have a huge impact. And so for me, where the responsibility comes in for change is to look at myself first and to say, you know, every time I go into a restaurant and eat, they bring me a glass of water with a straw in it. It takes 5 minutes to make that straw in a factory. It takes over 100 years for it to decompose. So my commitment, it's a simple little thing, a little owning of my shadow. I love to drink through a straw. I've made a commitment and I did it in front of other people. I will no longer use straws. If they come, even if it's in my glass, even though I say, well, it's already in my glass, I'm going to take it out and lay it down and say, no, thank you. I'm going to get in a habit to the point that I can say proactively, please don't bring a straw in my glass. It's a simple little thing. But there's hundreds of thousands of things like that, such as seeing someone in a grocery store being harassed because they happen to be Hispanic, and people saying, go back to your own country, and to walking over and standing by that person and saying, we're all immigrants. Okay? So there's so much of my own shadow that I have to own to not be afraid, or even if I am afraid, to take the right actions anyway. If more and more people were doing that, then there wouldn't be this external shadow that we see that's a collective shadow. You know, the collective shadow is made up of a lot of little shadows. So I really focus on, and I know Carly does this, in our work with people, we both work with scores of people, many, many people all around the country, all in other countries, and taking them into these processes like the shamanic breath work and the ceremonies that we do that help people really look at themselves and what they can do to heal their own lives. And I'll tell you, there's nothing more important or more powerful for people out there than to meet a person who's got a lot of wholeness inside of them. That makes a huge impact. And I don't know of anything that makes a bigger impact. Do you, Carly?
No. Yeah. And when we are in that place, you know, of being more, you know, connected in our own truth and conscious of our shadows, when we get triggered, I mean, like, there are big things going on in the world. And someone was recently talking to me about the sex trade. You know, those kinds of things trigger us, you know, yes, because we feel a sense of helplessness, you know, and or when we're, you know, we're wanting to point the finger at somebody. Part of the journey is to look at our own selves. How am I like that? What is it that it's in me that I need to look at? You know, that's getting triggered right now, that feels that sense of helplessness or feels the anger that this kind of injustice is going on in the world. How can I really reflect that deep within me? And once I do, you know, it opens up this place inside of me where a new kind of energy and connection and power and I guess it's really honoring that it comes from a place of huge respect then for other, you know, and then that dialogue, you know, it's passing through the heart as I can look at somebody who's been through and done horrendous things and see beyond the horrendous things to see the human that's there who has really suffered and shut down so much so that they've compartmentalized aspects of themselves. And when we begin to see it in the other, because it's reflected in us, it begins to transform the other. Because the other has so much shame and disconnect and, you know, has isolated themselves in so many ways that they're no longer functioning from a place of their own inner truth, which is that whole Dorothy, you know, as she's clicking her heels, you know, I love that, you know, you brought up a great metaphor. And movies, particularly children's movies, are often incredible examples of what's going on in the collective that people download and they take in, because we can always go back home. And the home is in us. The home is to remember the sacred container in our own hearts, you know, even when we've been through tremendous tragedy, you know, and we have really lost our soul to do destructive things. It is in this process of doing our own work that we open the door, you know, to the communication. You know, to be a new kind, and that's a new kind of warrior. You know, that is a warrior of the heart that says, you know, we're all this. It's different kind of tools that we are using to support the transformation on the planet, to raise the vibration, you know, and the remembering of our interconnection.
Well, this is a good time to be alive for all of us, because another metaphor is we're at the tipping point. Over the years, the force and the impulse of the patriarchal way of living, I remember in the Bhagavad Gita, it comes up, what is the most difficult thing about fighting a war? And Krishna says, the most difficult thing is not to become what you're fighting. Because if you're fighting something monstrous, if you're fighting it on that level, you have to become more monstrous. So over the years, we have accelerated this monstrousness into advanced technology, which threatens the whole planet. But now, because of the work people like you are doing and many, many others, that tipping point is coming. We've put so much weight on this other part of the scale that now every little thing we put on there tips the scale a little bit more. Where, I mean, going all the way back to when we were fighting about the unfairness of the racial perspective in this country, not much was happening. It was just so forceful, the ingrained government and society. But now every little thing we do is making an effect. And it's because of all of the people that's put all of their energy and all of their dedication and sometimes their life into this other part of the scale. So now is our time, because now the people that were sitting at home on the couch not doing anything because they say, oh, it's just hopeless, now they can start looking out and actually seeing changes being made by little things that are happening in our environment, in our government, and the world as a whole.
You know, it's there's some say that we're in the fifth most rapid time of evolution on our planet. And we know that astrologically, we are moving, you know, right now into the age with all 12 astrological houses and that represented in the heavens. Earth itself is moving into this brand new relationship with these planets, Aquarius to the north, in relationship to the energy of Leo to the south. And so there is a shadow and a light aspect of each of these as well. And we're at this place of moving this along in terms of consciousness. But a lot of it has to do with where we choose to focus, you know, in terms of that tipping point. What do we want to focus on it? And how do we do our own personal work? Or not how do we do it, but, you know, although that may be a question as well, but doing our own personal work helps to shift it in the direction that comes into a love and respect for all of life, that all of it is sacred, you know, the plants, you know, the animals, you know, the environment itself is all, in addition to the people, are sacred. You know, I guess I want to, you know, just put this piece of it in it, because really another part of the feminine work is to allow ourselves the opportunity to digest our experiences, you know, because if we don't digest, the warrior who goes to war and you know, ends up killing a lot of people or doing damage in any innumerable ways, you know, for what they believe is right. And I think it comes from that place of, you know, really needing and desiring to make the world a better place. But when we get into that role and then experience what we experience, which is so counter to life, you know, that if we don't have an opportunity to digest and work through the emotions, whether there are childhood wounds or the wounds from a soldier, you know, it's really important to digest our experiences. And the integration of that brings that dark and light, you know, to a place of a new depth, a new perspective, a new understanding, a more expansive place, where if we don't, we constrict and we narrow and we begin to then force our agenda from that trauma. You know, rather than to see and understand this, that we're organic beings and it's important for us to digest our experiences.
Yeah, there was a philosopher named Hegel, and he brings up a really important point. He said that whenever you're looking for truth, it is seldom found in one perspective. It's when two different opposing perspectives can come together and find a way to communicate that the truth comes out of those polar opposites. And I have to tell you, Hitler, Stalin, Pol Pot, it doesn't matter who we talk about, none of them ever got up of a morning and said, today I'm going to go out and do evil. They all thought that they were doing the right thing, the best thing for their country, for themselves. You know, none of them really put that perspective on it. But the more we can reach out and embrace our individuality, but at the same time open up to the collectiveness of the fact that we are on a planet that is waking up. I knew I was talking to Peter Russell one time about the global brain. And the way we've evolved has been from one platform to the next, from subatomic particles to atoms, atoms to cells, cells to molecules, molecules to organs and organisms. And now here we are, as planetary cells, human beings. And we're waking up to this, it's a strange territory for us because we're waking up to another level of consciousness called planetary consciousness, where we're embracing all of the plants, the animals, all of ourselves, and we're sort of merging with a planet and its consciousness, Mother Earth, you might call it. And then at that point, what makes this exciting for me is that's not the end of the story, because if we become planetary consciousness, for one, we would probably be welcomed out into the cosmos by other advanced beings and races and worlds. But at that point, we're able to connect with solar consciousness. And as we connect with solar consciousness, we connect with galactic consciousness. And this is the journey that we're on. So it's so important to get unstuck from where we've been for thousands and thousands of years with our primal thinking. And I know I was listening to Terence McKenna one time. He says, think about this. It was about 40,000 years ago that cave paintings started to appear on the walls of caves, different things like that. Consciousness took a shift. And he thinks that what was responsible for that conscious shift was probably mushrooms and some of the psychedelics that the shamans were taking at the time. And he says the reason that is so important is because what guided those indigenous tribes and communities for millennia was the fact that the shamans had special dispensation for being the sort of crazy out there person in the tribe. But he is the one that would go to these inner realms and go into these dimensions and talk to the spirit guides, the nature guides, and bring back information to the tribe so the tribe would know the next step to take for their evolution. But living in a Western society especially, we've not only made that suspect for not being right, we've actually made it illegal in a lot of ways. But I can see that opening up more and more. So it's really important. Information like this, that's in this little book, I'm telling you, it's so important for the mass of people to start opening up to this kind of information, because this is the next step for our civilization to take. And if we don't take it, there's no guarantee that we will be allowed to continue to live on this planet. Myself, I'm a reluctant optimist. I can't help it. You know, I'll go to my grave being an optimist, even though I'm not too sure what warrants that sometimes, because we are in the sixth greatest extinction level right now, too. We're devouring this planet like a virus. But something in me tells me that I wrote an article for our magazine one time. It was called Humanity Evolves When Challenged. And there's example after example of this. Whenever we're challenged as a human race, we step up. And I see this in you too and many others as part of stepping up to this challenge. So I think we're getting close to time right now. Would I like to hear what you two have in mind, what you're going to be doing, and tell me the website that people can go to find out more about you, any contact information.
Why don't you go first, Carly? Go ahead.
We will be actually co-facilitating my husband, John Malin, who is the co-founder of Ahara Spiritual Community. Venus Rising, we're located in Springfield, Illinois, and we are taking a tour to visit some of these sacred sites, South Africa and Zimbabwe in November. And we offer a variety of workshops here, and some of it is, it involves the SHIP process, which is the Shamanic Healing Initiatory Process, which was created by Linda Starwolf, and that will start again in November. And there's just a lot of different workshops that we're offering, including one on spiritual warriorship, which is a series that we've developed here in response to some of the experience I had and the kind of energies that are needed right now on the planet. But a big part of my work right now is to share this book with the world and to bring it to as many places as I can to just share the wisdom that's there, because it was really, it really called me, and it wanted to be out there in the world at a time that it is so incredibly needed. And to find out more about the work that I do, you can go to www.ahara, which is A-A-H-A-R-A, spiritualcommunity.org. And you can find out a lot more about it there. And on the Facebook, we have a Facebook page for the book, and it's Sacred Messengers of Shamanic Africa, and it is will list different opportunities, maybe in your area where you might see that there's a chance to come for a journey, a shamanic journey, and a book signing. So we'll be traveling all over the world.
All right.
So thank you. It's been a delight to be on your show.
Rahasa, first of all, I want to thank you for being a veteran of this work in your own way. Everyone you mentioned, I know Peter Russell, and, many of the people I've met, talked to, and I've hung out with and that kind of thing. So I just want to acknowledge that we're some sort of shamanic kindred, long lost cousins or brother and sister or something in that way. So thank you for all the years that you have kept the faith and been holding the faith and being that eternal optimist, if you will. And I know that Carly and I are put in that same camp with you. We're not in denial, neither are you, about what's happening in the world, what's been happening, the intensity of what's happening right now. And as a fellow addictions counselor, you talked about the challenge and that things change frequently when there's the challenges when humanity changes. And I would say that when in all the years I worked in addiction, with many, many, many years, I never seen anybody get sober or change their addiction until they met a challenging time. As long as it was working for them, why change? So it's we're all addicted at this point, whether we want to admit it or not. We're all addicted to oil. We're all addicted to plastic. We're all addicted to all these things. And it's impossible not to participate in our addiction right this moment unless we completely don't drive a car, don't fly in an airplane, don't. And so it's going to be a systematic thing that we're going to have to do. We're going to have to, I just watched Mission Impossible the other night with Tom Cruise and watched him, save the world once again, thank God, and at the half a second, and they had to take apart these bombs and stuff. We have to take apart what we have constructed, and we have to do it either systematically. We have to do it. We have to do it together through the book and the things that we're doing, or we have to have some sort of God awful thing happen where we all pull together, the bottom to what we're going to, like they used to say, in the addictions field a lot, you get to choose where you get off the elevator, or where we're going to get off, and how long is it going to take? Is it going to take, because there's so much die off, there's so much pain and suffering, or can we do some preemptive strikes, and that's what this book is about. This is what not only the book, but the Ahara community, the mothership Venus Rising is about. It's what my work and Carly's has been about forever. So in order to know more about my work, it's www.shamanicbreathwork.org. We've been around Venus Rising, our organization, for more than 20 years. This is the 22nd year, I believe. I've been doing forms of breath work for 35 years. And I came out of the psychedelic world, if you will, from substances to activating my own DMT, to activating our own body chemicals. And we activate them in people all the time. And I've worked with shamans. I've shared the process with shamans who go like, wow, they love it. And we breed a lot of people. But one of the most important things that we do, in addition to breeding a lot of people, like when I was just out at with Don Miguel Ruiz at Gathering of the Shamans, and we breed 150 or 250 people in the audience all at once. That's great to be able to do something like that. But what I'm really focusing on is training other people. So for the last 20 years, I've been focused on training amazing people like Carly to do the breath work and then go back and create community, like at her Ahara community, where she then teaches people in her community. So we're spreading out over the world to do those kinds of things, that by doing the breath work, the shamanic breath work, we're helping people to remember that the shaman was within, the power is within, and we have the power to write books, do book talks, help other people heal, help people to own their shadows. And by doing this inner work, we have the opportunity truly to change the world one psyche at a time. Just the last piece I would say that about that is that Grandmother Twyla Nitch was my Seneca Wolf Clan grandmother. And she passed away in 2007. She was 94 years young when she passed. She was really and truly the last living Seneca Wolf Clan grandmother. And I said to her back a couple years before she passed, about 2005, is it too late? You know, is it too late? You know, and she just said to me, we're coming into the fifth world of illumination, where everything, the light and the shadow, is going to be illuminated. We're going to be able to see it. And that's what will determine when we see it. Can human beings really and truly, once they see it, truly turn away from the truth? That's what will determine it, and won't be determined until then. So in her words, right now, we're in the fifth world of illumination. We're being illuminated. The light is being shone on everything that's dark, everything that's light. And those of us who feel the call, like the three of us, must step up and shine that light both within and without, and give people the opportunity to truly, really see things. I have conversations with people all the time that once I do, they're looking at things differently. So if you want to come and do something with that, I know we go on. I get excited again. I
know.
I'm excited my whole life.
You just said.
I do want to mention a trip coming up in Peru in October, a few spots left, and in Bali in December. And next year we're going to Egypt again. So.
Yeah, you just brought up a lot of things right at the end that I want to talk about, and now we're out of time. So we'll have to do this again sometime.
Another time, perhaps.
All right. Thank you for your time. Lovely.